Chapter 17. Pike looked Cref up and down, struggling all the time not to guffaw out loud.
"You know, Cref, old son, this whole adventure has been one long costume catwalk for ye, ain't it?"
The big Hankayan was covered from head to foot in a heavy brown robe with thick ribbed seams. Baggy sleeves almost concealed Cref's big gloved hands, while a pair of boots poked out from beneath the robe's ground-sweeping edge, a noticeable amount of which trailed behind him. The hood's appearance seemed to mimic the rest of the bulky outfit, with an upper edge that drooped down like a lip, tapering lappets that dangled on either side, and a rear flap that hung down to the middle of his back.
"Shright, chief," said Cref,
voice slightly muffled by the half-mask which covered his mouth and nose.
"This one's pretty comfy, though. Smells better than the last one, too."
"Sure about that?" said Ansel. "What does it actually smell of?"
The big robed shape gave a brief shrug.
"Sort of like baked nuts, maybe?"
Ansel, biting his bottom lip, shot a glance at Pike, who was throttling the urge to grin.
"I guess it must be pretty warm under all that,"
Ansel said.
"But everything's getting baked."
At this, Cref tilted his head back to glare at Ansel.
"Ah, funny. You're dead funny, Anse. I can't wait till we get to do a job on a planet full of big people. Then I can say that you're all my nephews from the mountains."
He chuckled deep in his chest, a throaty, rumbling sound. Pike and his crew were sitting or standing around in a poorly lit basement, half full of crates, boxes, and curious hourglass-shaped storage canisters. One large box lay open, spilling brown and grey garments onto the tiled floor. Even though Cref's choice of attire provoked amusement, mused Pike, the droopy, baggy tunics, overalls and breeches that he and the others were wearing, along with enclosing headgear of various kinds, wasn't far behind his. The smell of Pike's own get-up reminded him strongly of the worst bout of trench foot he'd ever had, but he wasn't about to tell the others all about that. Before the exchange of banter could pick up steam, the basement door opened and Mokul, the Gruxan Nightfinder, who had led them into Armag City, slipped smoothly in, closing the door behind him. He was wearing an ankle-length dull yellow cloak with the hood pulled back. There was a hush as he looked the crew over one by one, ending with a reluctant nod.
"A lot of city guards are busy defending some of the approaches to the estates or patrolling the garths around the city, making sure no insurgents get in or out. Some headed up to the Stone Hands garrison, thinking they could mount a surprise attack on the chain of forces surrounding it. No one came back."
Pike arched an eyebrow.
"So, do you have a clear run from here up the tower, then?"
"Not quite. Some of the dignitary families flew their own vow guards in from plantations and breeder domains to the north, so that complicates matters. Also, members of Lord Giamatu's bodyguard are stationed before the main and only entrance, so you will need another way in."
He gave them all a final sweeping gaze.
"You look the part, and the cargo you'll be carrying should convince any onlookers."
"Cargo?"
Pike said. Mokul led them to the rear of the basement, through another door to a shadowy stairwell, where half a dozen large baskets with shoulder straps sat in a line on a trestle table. Strained gasps came forth as Mokul and Pike helped baskets onto backs. Cref, bearing his burden with ease, let out another rumble of chuckling.
"Your hand weapons are in the false bottoms," Mokul said. "When you need them, upend the baskets and rip them open."
Pike's own basket, like the others, was full of cloth bolts and bundles of animal hides and was staggeringly heavy. But when Mokul came to speak with him, he just gritted his teeth and gave one of his devil-may-care grins.
"Ready when you are," he said.
Mokul nodded.
I've told the others to keep the one-word answers if anyone says anything to them, as should you. It's very unlikely that any member of a dignitary coterie would even approach an underworker, but we should be prepared.
He paused to doff the cloak, twisted it into a ball, and lobbed it into a corner. Beneath, he wore a blue-grey semi-militaristic uniform similar to the ones Pike had seen on the various Armag guards. From a pocket, the Nightfinder took a blue cap, which he unfolded and tucked onto his head.
I, on the other hand, am a squad overseer, an official with whom limited exchanges are permissible. But again, that rarely happens. The dignitari, after all, think very highly of themselves.
He produced a folded piece of paper which he spread out against the wall close to a dull lamp. It showed the precincts of the Lord Governor's official residence, an eight-sided outer wall beyond which lay Armag City's network of streets. Inside the wall were unexplained radial layouts and what appeared to be a courtyard surrounding the Lord Governor's tower.
There are several entrances to the outer yards, Mokel said, but getting into the courtyard would be next to impossible normally. We will be going underground.
Not again, Ansel groaned.
And under the wall through what is essentially a food delivery system for the main oven house.
There were puzzled looks all round except for Pike, who had got the measure of this society.
What you're seeing is, no one cooks up the feasts inside the courtyard, he said. Might disrupt their high-born sensibilities, I'm thinking.
Mokel smiled.
Yes, that is exactly right. Servants work and serve. They do not share the exalted ambience of their master's playgrounds.
Will it work?
Said Mojack, all of a sudden.
And what do we do if that way is blocked to us?
Pike felt a chill go down his spine. It was Mojag's voice, but Oleg's speech pattern and assertive, querying style.
It should work, said Mokel. A lot of workers have failed to turn up for obvious reasons, the shooting, the fighting and so on, so there are fewer eyes taking notice of their surroundings. But if something gets in the way, I do have an alternative, slightly riskier way to get you all to the objective.
Right, then let's not waste any more time, Pike said.
The dark stairwell went up to an arched door that led out to a small square. By now, night had fallen, and the air smelled of ash, while minor alarms were ringing several streets away. With Mokel leading at the front, the crew lined up behind Pike, then Kref, then Mojag, then Ansel, and trudged off towards a main road. The Nightfinder led them across the thoroughfare to a side street, which curved round towards the outer yards of the governor's residence. Plodding through the darkness, Pike recalled the city as he'd seen it in the fading light of day, remembering the richness of the architecture, the jutting window bays, the well-formed stonework, and the plentiful blue and gold trim, all of which bore evidence of decades of wear and tear, scores and cracks, themselves rounded by the elements, as well as the cracked pavements and roads originally cobbled with hexagonal stones, which now were worn near smooth and half buried in accumulated dirt and gravel. There had been more inhabitants around earlier, although the occasional side glance revealed street-level bars and cafes doing a busy trade. After turning another couple of corners, they came to one of the entrances to the outer yards, the artisan zone. The guards wore mauve uniforms and carried double-barreled pistols in bulky holsters strapped to the leg. Mokel insisted on showing them several pages of documentation, which quickly provoked glazed eyes and a useful amount of tedium. They took a look inside one of the baskets, then shrugged and waved the party on through. The buildings here were taller and better maintained, while the roads were narrower and surfaced with some kind of artificial rubbery red material laid out in large square sections. Some of the tall buildings were grouped together with covered walkways linking them at different heights. There were enclosures where rows of handcarts were parked, and stone outbuildings with flat roofs, and the kind of venting machinery which was a sign of temperature-regulated storage, perhaps for food. Mokel steered them along a curved pathway running parallel with the outer wall, before turning onto a wider street which ran straight and unbroken to a high wall which enclosed the inner courtyard. Giamatou's tower was visible in its entirety, with its spacious balconies and its clusters of oval windows all shuttered and dark under the security lockdown. This close, Pike realised that it wasn't a proper freestanding tower after all. Since Armag City was built at the foot of a sheer cliff-sided promontory, and the rear of the lower sections of the Lord Governor's Tower extended back to the rock face, so clearly the interior floors spread back into the promontory itself. Higher up, a single arched bridge joined the penultimate floor, which lay beneath the landing pad to the cliffside. Against the night sky, it looked imposing. Regal, a manifestation of authority, with a heavy dash of impregnability. We'll see about that, Pike thought with a smile in the shadows. Following Mokul's lead, they turned a corner in time to see two large carts carrying big bright yellow canisters go past at the next junction, their hauliers straining at their yokes with a fevered urgency. Mokel held up a hand to stop the crew and then gestured them into the shadows of an alleyway.
"Wait here for a moment,"
he said, and was gone. Everyone was hushed and tense for a few seconds. Then Ansel spoke in a stage whisper.
"Does this mean we don't have to go crawling through tunnels again, Chief?"
"If there is any justice in the cosmos," Pike said, just as Mokel reappeared.
"The oven house is belching smoke,"
he said,
"and court sentries are all over the place, cordoning off part of the street and questioning anyone in sight. They seem to think that Chainer sympathisers are responsible."
Pike gave him a sympathetic pat on the shoulder. "Well, me old sweat, time for Plan B, I reckon." Mokel regarded him in a measuring kind of way for a second.
"You may not be so keen when you hear what it is, Captain."
"Let me be the judge of that," Pike said. "If I think you're talking a complete crock, you'll know soon enough. So let's hear it."
Mokel breathed in deeply.
"Kitchens and artisan workshops are not the only things which the dignitari prefer to keep beyond the courtyard wall. The sons and daughters from some of the dignitari families favour pastimes that require a certain amount of technical support, but which the seniors have relegated to the outer yards. In short, the more daring of their offspring like to manually fly light wings, small propeller-driven craft. There are four of them hangared in the top floor of a workshop block back round the other side."
Pike smiled. "So we'd just hop into these little flyers, buzz right over there and get ourselves onto one of those pretty balconies?"
"Each of the light wings has a built-in suspensor so that the precious progeny of the wealthy don't face too much risk. With those activated, getting everyone airborne and safely across shouldn't be a problem. Of course, to get inside the tower, you'll need to break into one of those armoured balcony shutters."
Pike nodded, then muttered over his shoulder,
"Ansel, you got any of those tasty charges left?"
"Still got a handful, Chief. Get us through anything short of a blast door."
"Good," said Mokel, straightening and pulling his cap tight.
"It's not too far, but we'll still need the baskets."
About 10 minutes later, after a grueling trudge through half-lit side streets, Mokel led them into some kind of loading cloister at the rear of an 8-story building showing no lights above the ground floor.
"The dignitaries' rising generation insist on round-the-clock protection for their toys,"
the Nightfinder said as the crew doffed disguises and retrieved weapons from their baskets' false bottoms.
"I was told that there are at least 3 guards inside, and we need to bring them down fast and silent before they can trigger any alarms."
"So, how am I going to get over to the tower?"
said Kref.
I'm not a skinny midget like Ansel, and I don't know if I can fly a little plane.
You'll be with me, Pike said, and I'll be flying. Don't eat yourself up about it. I'll have the suspenser running on full and we'll be fine. He turned to Mokel. Right, how are we going to play this?
I'll start a diversion at the main door while you and the others creep in from the goods entrance over there, rush and drop them.
Pike chuckled. Sneaky and underhand. I like it. Is that back door visible from the front door? The Nightfinder shook his head.
Though, there is a storage room and a ramp down to the basement. Another door leads out of the hallway.
Okay, let's get to it.
Everything seemed to go quite smoothly. Mokel picked the lock on the rear entrance before heading round to the front of the building. Pike ushered the others inside one by one, ensuring that footfalls were careful and quiet. Then came the sound of someone banging a fist on the front door, shortly followed by Mokel's mock-drunken voice, insisting that he had been sent by one of the Aristo Lightwing owners to collect some essential personal effects. This exchange led to raised voices and developed into an argument of increasingly angry loudness. Pike nodded to the rest, then gingerly opened the door to the hallway. From a tiptoe start, they leapt forward and took the three guards completely by surprise. Mokel closed the front door as the guards were variously buffeted or chokeholded into insensibility. All according to plan, until a fourth guard appeared at the back of the hallway and made a panicky dash for the main stairway.
"Stop him!" yelled Mokel. "Quick!"
Pike whirled away from one of the motionless guards and lunged back down the hall towards the foot of the stairs. But Kref, betraying an unexpected presence of mind, simply smashed aside a couple of the stairway banister supports, grabbed the fleeing guard by the ankles, and dragged him, screaming, back through the splintered gap. One punch from the Henkayan, and all was suddenly silent, apart from the thud of the unconscious guard falling to the floor.
"Nice interception there," Pike told Kref.
"I like the direct approach, Captain," said Kref. "It's direct."
Mokel straightened from searching one of the guards, holding up a set of keys.
"I'll lock the doors, then we can head upstairs."
Minutes later, the five of them emerged onto a long, dark rooftop. Coin-sized guidance lamps embedded in the flat roof traced out a landing strip barely 20 meters long, a double line of glowing pale green dots. Mokel was already over at the small hangar, tugging open the concertina shutters.
"We should leave the main lights off," the Nightfinder said. "If we rely on the Lightwing's own panel lights, it'll minimize being spotted from out there."
Pike followed the brief gesture, which encompassed the outer yards, the buildings, the main wall, and the rest of Armag City. Smoke was rising from several locations, like strange pitch-black fountains billowing and bleeding into the night sky. Sounds of gunfire came from every direction, and just occasionally, Pike heard the crump of grenades. A series of clicks, hums, and rustling sounds made him turn. Mokel and the others were wheeling a couple of odd-looking craft out of the hangar. Tiny lights glowed in their open-work cockpits, and their opaque wings were unfolding and stiffening into flight configurations. Then Pike noticed that both cockpits could only hold two, pilot and passenger sitting back to back.
"Not coming with us," he said.
Mokel gave a regretful smile.
"It has been quite an invigorating task getting you and your crew to this point, Captain. But from here, you must steer your own fates."
He looked out at the city.
"I need to be down there, helping my people free themselves."
"Yes, I know what that feels like," Pike said. "Mokel, it's been a bit of a mad hoolie with yourself and Vralko. Tell him to keep his head down next time you see him."
"I shall, I promise."
Mokel indicated the nearest Lightwing.
"Time to board your flying machine, Captain."
Ansel and Mojag were already climbing into their craft. A frowning Kref, however, was staring at their Lightwing with suspicion.
Don't see how I can get into it.
The passenger seat and its framework are adjustable, Mokel said. I've already prepared it for you. Look. Grumbling, Kref let the Nightfinder guide him into the passenger seat and help him get belted in. Over in the other craft, Ansel was watching the entire process with a kind of wondering gaze. Pike pointed at him and made a shh gesture. Ansel grinned and shrugged.
Well now, this is cozy,
Pike said as he strapped into the pilot seat, grabbed the basic-looking control column and peered over it at the small dashboard. Mokel leaned in to show him the button that started the twin propellers and, more importantly, the suspensor on-off knob, which could also turn the anti-grav up to maximum. He thumbed the engine start, listened to the low hum of the motor's climb in pitch, then turned on the suspensor and nodded to Mokel.
You'll have to judge it finally when you get near the tower balcony, the Nightfinder said. Keep the suspensor up full, turn off the motors and glide to a slow landing, would be my advice.
Ansel and Mojag were already taxiing onto the tiny runway, and Pike heard one of them let out a whoop as the light wing leapt forward in a sudden surge of acceleration. A curved incline had been added to the runway at the edge of the roof, and the light wing zoomed off the end and into the air. Then dived in a sickening sideslip, which took them out of view.
Holy Mother of God, Pike said through gritted teeth,
then let out a gasp of relief when the small craft reappeared on a climbing course that curved back round towards the rooftop. They waved to Ansel and Mojag, but then saw Ansel pointing back and to the ground.
Guards are coming,
he shouted as he skimmed past overhead. Mokel turned to Pike.
Get going.
Pike cranked up the engine speed and steered onto the runway.
Now you're coming with us,
he yelled at Mokel. He shook his head and waved farewell.
They'll find me hard to track down,
he replied and dashed off back to the hangar. Pike turned the engines and the suspensor up full and let the craft hurtle down the roof. Kref was bellowing something, but the vibration was making it hard to understand, and Pike started to yell back that he shouldn't worry when the light wing leapt off the edge of the building, and they were in flight. Suddenly, Pike had to grasp the control column and keep them on course for the tower, keep the light wing's nose up, but not too far. Part of him wanted to look back at the landing strip or down at the ground, but instead he stared ahead, glancing at the tower. And for one clear, cold moment, as they coasted through the air, Pike looked up at a cloudless night sky and saw the nearby worlds of the War Cage, that vast megasystem with its hundreds of planets, silvery crescents of worlds hanging in that artificial array like jewels in a lattice, serene and beautiful.
Dervladali, he thought, this better work, and Kor had better be keeping you and Wynne safe.
Then he turned his attention back to his goal, the Lord Governor's Tower. But more immediately, where were Ansel and Mojag? He gave their surroundings a quick scan as he leaned forward to adjust the suspensor controls, allowing him to decrease altitude while swooping towards the tower in a gentle curve.
Captain!
Kref said loudly.
We might have a problem.
Just as the Henkayan spoke, Pike heard the faint crack of small arms fire and the high-pitched insect whine of rounds.
Evil Gojan maggots!
Pike roared as he wrenched the light wing into a tight bank. The tower swung across their path, looming hugely, as Pike's manoeuvre brought the craft in close. He had to reduce the suspensor field a notch again so that he could dive and try to locate Ansel and Mojag. And there they were, already on one of the lower balconies. He cheered and pointed them out to Kref.
But how are we going to land on that little shelf, Captain?
By virtue of me amazing talents and piloting skill, of course,
and our handy onboard anti-grav generator. Coming around and gaining a little height, Pike managed to get a better view of the balcony in question. As he caught sight of it again,
He was in time to see two figures go into crouching positions at either end of the balcony, a moment before there was a flash, a gout of smoke, and the muffled bang of a detonation. Pike grinned.
Ansel wasn't wasting time with those charges.
"Ansel's just blown open the shutters," he yelled over his shoulder. "I'm going to try to get us down on that balcony nice and gently."
"What?"
Pike laughed and shrugged in the icy slipstream. He now had to bring their altitude down, level with the balcony, simultaneously increasing the suspense of field strength while cutting the light wing's airspeed enough to result in a soft landing. Pike thought it was an excellent plan, but the guards on the ground had other ideas. A volley of shots, including bright energy weapon barbs, whined and buzzed past, with accompanying cracks and rips as rounds struck the light wing. Hanging onto the control column, he felt the craft lurch to the side, even as Kref let out a wordless yell of panic.
"Hold on, Kref!"
Pike roared. The suspensor unit, mounted directly beneath their back-to-back seats, was giving off a high-pitched, wavering rasp sound. The light wing was jerking in time with it, and as more shots cracked past, Pike knew that he wouldn't get another chance at this.
"Brace yourself, Kref! This'll make your teeth rattle!"
The tower rushed towards them, snarling and cursing. Pike fought to keep the craft level as it swooped towards the balcony. Ansel and Mojag were crouching either side of the now gaping window. It looked as if they had pulled the broken shutters aside or away, because Pike could actually see into the shadowy interior. And for a second, he locked gazes with a wide-eyed Ansel when the light wing was just yards away. There was a cracking sound as the light wing's landing struts sheared off, then Pike and Kref and their flying machine plunged through the open window into shadowy darkness. The wings were ripped away in an instant. Pike tasted dust and grit, and he held grimly on to the control column as they struck the floor of some large chamber, scraped and slid across it, and eventually slewed to a halt next to a wall. Dizziness assailed him for a moment, then he began tugging at the safety belt, just as Ansel came rushing over.
"Damn it, Chief! You made it!"
"Well, of course. I got too many axes to grind to pig out this early. How's Kref doing?"
"Lost my boots, Captain. Something knocked them off."
Coughing, Pike stood, brushed dust off his jacket, then stepped out of the light wing's wreckage and headed back towards the balcony.
"Hang on, Chief," Ansel said. "Shouldn't we set about heading up this damn tower?"
"Yes, laddie, just as soon as I bid farewell to our good friends."
Pike went out onto the balcony, leaned over the balustrade, and bellowed at the guards milling about below.
"Bog my horn, ya gang of pukes!"
Grinning, he pushed away from the stone coping and went back inside. Mojag was leaning on a large piece of furniture like a gargantuan desk, arms folded, as he watched Pike haul out the big, chunky Gruxan pistol and check it. Mojag's smile was languid, thoughtful, and distinctly un-Mojag-like as he glanced over at Ansel, who was still helping Kref out of the destroyed Lightwing.
"When?"
he said.
"I can't go on pretending like this. So if you don't tell them, I will."
In a low voice, Pike said, "Not the time, Oleg, and not the police. Let's just get this devil-damn mission settled and try to get Davla and Wynn back. Then we'll get everyone together and lay it all out, right?" Frowning, Oleg Mojag nodded.
"Okay, my crafty brigands," Pike said loudly. "Get your guns at the ready. 'Cause we're off to find the Aristothug who runs this shack and send him to his maker. Then maybe we can get out of this madhouse."
Ansel raised his gun, a heavy, fat-barreled revolver, and spun the cylinder.
"Lead the way, Chief. Let's give him a thrashing."
Kref looked unhappy.
"But I got no boots."
Pike pointed a thumb upwards.
"I'm sure we'll find a guard in this place who'll be only too happy to lend you his. As long as you ask nicely."
The big Henkayan gave a wide grin.
"I'm good at that, Captain."